listening to On the Same Page, a podcast from the Jefferson Madison Regional Library. Welcome back to another episode of On the Same Page. We're your hosts. I'm Abby.
I am also Abby. We're librarians at the Central Library.
In this episode, we're sharing our recent interview with Claire Roudet from the Blue Ridge Health District. We discussed their services offered, the pandemic, and more.
But before we get to that, we've got book chat.
All right, book chat. I'm gonna jump in and start us off here. I read Piranesi by Susan Clark. And let me start by saying that the reason I picked this up is because this author has a book that has been on my to-read list for years, and I still have not picked it up. And that book is Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell. So I put Susanna Clark's new one on hold because it's like maybe a third as long as the other one. And I thought, if I can read this and enjoy it, then I'll inspire myself to pick up the other one. Well, I did read this and I did enjoy it, but I still have not picked up Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell. So maybe I'll have to add that as a resolution for this year to finally get around to that. Anyway, I really enjoyed this book. It's got a very interesting premise and structure. It's set in this world that is essentially an infinite labyrinth. It's a sort of endless ruin, classical architecture filled with statues that's kind of slowly being overtaken by the sea. I don't know if it's really being overtaken, but it is surrounded by the sea, and that has like filled a few of the rooms. We don't really know how much it's changing over time, or if it has just always been kind of in the midst of the sea. Anyway, it's written as the journal of our somewhat unnamed narrator. He refers to the ruins that he lives in as the house, with a capital H. So he lives this mostly solitary existence, but he does have human interaction with a person he calls the other, who he meets with twice a week, but never sees otherwise. And the other calls the narrator Piranesi, which is a reference to a classical architect and artist and archaeologist, you know, as people did in those days. multi-talented. Yeah, and he would draw these sort of like labyrinth or kind of endless atmospheric looking prisons. And so the idea is that this world is almost like an endless prison. The other calls the narrator that is kind of a joke because he thinks this guy is just stuck in a labyrinth. But the narrator calls himself not Piranesi, but the beloved child of the house. That's how he thinks of himself. He's just the beloved child of the house. So it sounds a bit odd to lay it out like that, but it's done in this kind of incredible way. The narrator spends his days exploring the house. He's meticulously documenting what he finds and indexing all of his journal entries, trying to understand the house as well as he can. He knows when the tides come, when the tides meet, things like that. He knows exactly which hall is going to be filled with water at what time, or where he's likely to find fish to eat, that sort of thing. But as the story progresses, he starts following this thread that kind of leads him to this troubling of understanding of how he came to exist in the house, because he has no memory of life before the house. So the whole thing has this really like compelling surrealness. It's got beautiful imagery, and I couldn't think of any other books that it reminded me of until I saw a review where somebody said that it was perfect for readers who loved Neil Gaiman's The Ocean at the End of the Lane, which, unlike the rest of Neil Gaiman's books, like it's not really funny. It's very atmospheric, otherworldly. And I feel like at times you're not sure the narrator really knows where they are. You know, you're not sure if they're really experiencing the world they seem to be experiencing. So yeah, I thought that was a spot on recommendation, but it was otherwise unlike anything I've read, and I did definitely enjoy it.
Wow. So two comments. What hooked me in there was when you said troubling memory of how he gets into the house. Okay, now I just need to know what this is, how he got into the house, what that troubling memory is. So that was the hook. That's interesting. And my other comment is, you said this author, is it Clark?
Yes.
Who's the author?
Yes, okay. Susanna Clark.
Great. So their long book that you want to read, you should choose that for the Book Riot Read Harder Challenge, the book that intimidates you.
That's a great idea.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
So that might work, because I know you're doing that as part of your resolutions, the Read Harder Challenge, which, speaking of resolutions, I have also decided to adopt that challenge as one of my resolutions. And I'm kind of doing it in place of my decade resolutions because, you know, some goals are meant to inspire and then be gently let go. So I feel like that got me excited about reading for the year. And now I think instead of choosing those books, I'm going to follow your lead and, you know, be a little more intentional. And I just, when I saw the Read Harder Challenge, it got me excited. So if you haven't looked at it, listeners, do check it out from our show notes because it looks very fun.
Yes.
Also related to resolutions. Before I dive into my book chat, just wanted to let all of our listeners know that we'll be discussing more about resolutions at our next Accountability Club meeting. It's going to be February 11th at 7:30 p.m. So if you would like to register, you can find that on our calendar on our website. And it's just a great chance to meet other people who are working towards goals, reading or not reading related. All goals are welcome. And now I'll just jump into my book chat, which is related to my reading resolution. So this episode, I'd like to share with you two books that are Coretta Scott King Award winners. And that was one of my reading resolutions, if our listeners remember. So the first book is a picture book, so it's just a very short book chat, but it's called The Stuff of Stars. It's written by Marion Dane Bauer and illustrated by Akua Holmes. So this book won the Coretta Scott King Illustrator Award in 2019. And even though it won the Illustrator Award, I'll just start by talking about the words. They're beautiful, they're poetic. The premise of this picture book is that it's all about how all of history and all of the present are intimately connected. So how it all began and how life continues to grow. As you can imagine, the book is called The Stuff of Stars. So it kind of starts with the Big Bang, and it's all about stardust and how we are breathing the same air as the woolly mammoths. And there's this one line in the book, it says, the child's hair used to be the carbon in a leaf like millenniums ago or something. So it's just kind of spacey and really neat like that. And there's also some great varied vocabulary, which is important for little ones to give them expose them to new words. But now diving into the illustrations, I can see why this won the Illustrator Award because it's so inventive. So this book has hand marbled paper collage, and it's just totally dark. I mentioned that it's the Big Bang, so it's fiery. It's really bursting with life. You're illustrating basically an explosion, but it's not scary. It's just almost like, it's just beautiful. And this is a book that I, as an adult, just kept wanting to pick up again and again. So it was a great one to share with kids, you know, or even to just look at and admire the art. So I would recommend that. And the other book that I just wanted to touch on is called Piecing Me Together, and it's written by Renee Watson. So this one was a Coretta Scott King Author Award winner in 2018. So this was YA title, and it's about Jade, who is a busy junior in high school. So she goes to a private school outside of her neighborhood. And during the novel, we see her primarily dealing with two aspects of her life. So she's enrolled in a mentorship program called Woman to Woman. That's one of the aspects. And the other is navigating friendships, so new and old. So it's a relationship-centered novel. And through these relationships with both her peers and the adults, one of the coolest things about it is seeing, especially at the climax of the book, we really see Jade as kind of the recipient of some tough love from her closest friend and her mother and her mentor. I personally loved that because it's so true how we often grow as humans, is some tough love. We also, through those relationships, the Renee Watson, she gets us thinking. She gets those wheels turning, which I'm so glad that YA authors are doing this. But she's introducing and exploring these tough topics like race and class, private school, public schooling, and kind of most deep and maybe thought-provoking is her question of what constitutes culture. And also what kind of messaging kids are receiving when they're tapped for these quote unquote opportunities. That's one of the questions that Jade wrestles with is, I'm chosen for these opportunities. And is it because kind of the white culture around me thinks that I need to be fixed? Is it because I'm broken? And we see Jade working a lot with collage. That's one of the two main threads that works through this novel is collage, the other one being language. But she works through collage and mixed media, and it's a great kind of parallel for her life, because as she faces racism and all these problems, we see her almost broken, you know, like the pieces of her collage, but she's then putting it back together. She's creating art. So it's a neat thread throughout the book. And then just also briefly talking about language, Jade learns Spanish in the book. So it works really well because as we see Jade study Spanish, we're also triumphing with her when she learns the power of using her own voice. She's advocating and speaking up for herself. So really some neat kind of threads of metaphor throughout the story. And it is a YA title, but I would say it's very appropriate for even kids who are on the cusp of YA literature. So maybe they're older kids or younger tweens, or, you know, when you're kind of in the middle, because it has lots of positive role models and messages, and very, very little content that would be for more mature audiences, like, you know, drinking, alcohol, drugs, anything like that. Those elements are, if they're present, they're very, very much on the periphery. So I love Jade as a character. She is filled with, and she continues to grow in self-awareness and self-love. So she was a fun character to spend time with.
That's excellent. When you were listing the first book, what was the name of that?
That was called The Stuff of Stars.
The Stuff of Stars. So as soon as you mentioned that, and apologies if you saw me doing a little tap-tapping, when you mentioned the illustrator's name, Ekwa Holmes, I immediately thought, I know that person. And that was not her first Coretta Scott King Illustrator Award. She'd won one the year before for a collaboration with Kwame Alexander, called Out of Wonder, Poems Celebrating Poets. And I only know that because I think the announcement for the Coretta Scott King Award, it might've been a different award, was made the day that the two of them came to Charlottesville for a Virginia Festival of the Book event. I think it was a festival event. And so she hadn't heard yet, and Kwame Alexander told her that on stage, and she was a bit overwhelmed. So I was just remembering that. So she is, I have not read the book that you mentioned, but I had read Out of Wonder, and I know her artwork is incredible. So
awesome. Okay, well, thank you. You gave me my next book to look at, my next Coretta Scott King winner.
I highly recommend it.
Next up, we'll hear our interview with Claire.
So thank you so much for joining us. Can you introduce yourself briefly and tell us what your job is?
Sure. So my name is Claire Roudet. I'm a public health nurse, and I am the HIV STD program manager for the Blue Ridge Health District. So I manage our HIV STD hepatitis outreach in the community, as well as our services in-house and our HIV pre-exposure prophylaxis program and our housing for individuals with AIDS and HIV positive. So basically everything STD, HIV related.
Thank you. Thanks for coming on the podcast, Claire. We're excited to have you. And just to kind of jump into our first question, can you explain what the Blue Ridge Health District is and what's the purpose of a health district, how it kind of compares to a health department?
Sure, absolutely. So our health district encompasses Charlottesville City, Albemarle County, Fluviana County, Greene County, Nelson County, and Louisa County. There are 35 health districts in Virginia, and in like 50s, kind of through the 70s, the state incentivized groupings of counties to get together with cities to create these health districts so that we can kind of, things can stay local as far as identifying what our needs are, but we can pool our resources. So we can kind of, you know, each location has its own health department within Greene County and Nelson County and Louisa County, et cetera. Charlottesville, Albemarle is actually combined into one here in Charlottesville City. But we can pull our resources, like right now, where we have the nurses from throughout the district giving COVID vaccines throughout the district. So that was kind of the thought process behind it.
That's great. That sounds a lot like how we have a regional library system. They're probably pushed around the same time. Can you tell us what some of the services are that are offered by the health district?
Yeah, so the state requires certain services to be offered by every location, like communicable disease control and family planning, restaurant inspections, sewage disposal, well construction, and obviously emergency preparedness. Our health district is really lucky that we can offer a bunch of other services that aren't necessarily everywhere. So we give immunizations, we do sexual health testing and treatment, both in the office and, like I mentioned, in the community. We have for rapid HIV and Hep C testing, car seat classes, refugee assessments, housing assistance for individuals living with HIV or AIDS, the HIV pre-exposure prophylaxis, and then we also offer vital records, nursing home pre-admission screenings, tobacco cessation counseling, WIC food services, so just everything. A lot of services people don't realize we have.
Sure.
That does sound like a lot. I would have never guessed so much of that, but it's really great to hear about that. And how have you changed or adapted your services during the pandemic? And have you added any new services? I know you mentioned vaccines, so maybe that is something that you want to talk about, or what else is new?
Yeah, so we actually practice for emergencies yearly. That's part of kind of what we do. So if anybody's gotten flu shots out in the community with us, that's a practice exercise for us. So no matter what the emergency, some of our services have to keep going. Communicable disease response, as you can imagine, has to keep going regardless of the emergency. You know, people have to be able to access their vital records. So those continued, but a lot of our services had to pause or stop at the beginning of the pandemic because the whole staff was focused on either case investigation or contact tracing or the hotline or making sure we could get PPE to local nursing facilities and our facilities. So there was a lot of stuff at the very beginning where our staff had to be focused on that. So we never fully shut down services. Like, we always had family planning services somewhere because people always need to be able to access their birth control or their PrEP, but services were curtailed a lot. Luckily, we were pretty proactive in our health district about hiring new staff to take over things like the case investigation, contact tracing, all that stuff that we identified at the beginning we were going to need people for. And so some of us were able to be, you know, go back to restaurant inspections and everything that actually needed happening. But now we have the vaccine for COVID, which is excellent. But a lot of our staff has been redeployed to do that. So a huge number of our staff are over at the big tent outside Kmart giving vaccines. And tomorrow we will be at the tent as well as a location, I believe, in Nelson County. So we're trying to be able to provide services in-house, but at the same time, we need to be able to get the community vaccinated. So that's, like I said, curtailed some of our services again. They're still accessible, just not as frequent or on regular schedule anymore because we need to be getting vaccines in arms.
Makes a lot of sense. So given the current restrictions, caused by the COVID outbreak or pandemic, what are some steps that someone needs to take to access your services? And, you know, what are the special protocols in place?
So really, to access the services, we just recommend calling your local health department because they're going to be somewhere. So tomorrow we're actually providing sexual health services in Charlottesville because they were needed. And so we're doing that. And yesterday they were in Greene County and next week they're in Flavanna County. So they're somewhere. You just may have to travel a little bit or wait a little bit to get to them, but we are still servicing them. So we just need to call your local one. They will either transfer you to the right person to answer your question or just make you an appointment. And as far as when people come, you know, we have the same protocols that I think most places have adopted around here now, which is, you know, screening people ahead of time, make sure you don't have COVID or in quarantine when you walk in the building. We do have someone at the front who does temperatures and asks kind of COVID screening questions, and then everybody has to wear a mask. So that's, you know, I think that's kind of standard these days at a lot of facilities.
Definitely.
So you talked a lot about services and some of your original pre-pandemic services having to kind of be put on hold or spread a little more thin, but it's great that you're still offering so many, especially those ones that people constantly need. Like you said, you can't stop birth control. You need that. And what we're curious to know too is what would you say is the health district's role in the local COVID response, just kind of on a personal level for us with the library, any sort of involvement that you guys have with talking to other institutions or government agencies, something like that?
So we have, we have a whole team focused on the case investigation and contact tracing. We have a whole team who works the hotline. We have a whole team hired to do testing, COVID testing, and they've been doing it in the community for a few months now. We obviously have a whole team out at the tents and then out doing the vaccines. We have a new team we just hired as far as enforcement, because not only are we the people in charge of all the things I just mentioned, but we're also the ones enforcing the executive orders regarding masks and you know, restaurants, as far as how many, you know, people can be inside at one time. So when people call in and make a complaint or have a concern about someplace that may not be following the executive orders, that's us again coming out. We have kind of people in the administration, our administration, working on coordinating all of those efforts and also working with local agencies to make sure that they're following the current restrictions. So we all know as our numbers go up or down, you know, we've had more relaxed rules. And then as numbers go up, we have to kind of tighten things up to make sure that things don't spread. So trying to stay on top of all that is a full-time job, it feels like. So making sure that our organizations are on top of what the most recent recommendations are, but then also, you know, we have a number of really good health systems in the area. And so coordinating with UVA and Sentara and all of their outlying facilities to make sure that we're not duplicating efforts, but at the same time, we're coordinating our activities.
How do you, I'm curious to know what the kind of enforcement looks like. What can you guys do as far as enforcing some of those protocols?
That is a great question. That does not fall under me, so I'm not sure I'm gonna say the exact right answer. I think we start by asking nicely. in person. I mean, I think we start by, you know, educating, because a lot of places just really don't know. And so it's a lot of times it's, you know, a truly honest mistake or something like that. But should that not work? I believe in-person visits are made as far as, you know, asking nicely and then asking not as nicely. And then I really don't know what the step is after that. I'm going to knock on wood and say we haven't had to take whatever the next step is. There are other steps we can take. But I haven't at this point heard that we've had to. But I mean, my field is sex, so they don't really involve me in that.
Gotcha. So moving away from COVID, can you talk a little bit about the community health assessments and improvement plans?
Yeah, absolutely. So Basically, there's this organization that we all fall under called the National Association of County and City Health Officials, and they have a plan for mobilizing for action through planning and partnerships. So the MAP, people may have heard of MAP to Health, which is our local one. And so basically it's a framework for organizations and coalitions and residents to work together for action and sustainable change towards improved health and well-being. And so our MAP group is Planning District 10, which is our health district and includes, Sentara Martha Jefferson Hospital, UVA's Department of Public Health Sciences, and then the health system, as well as hundreds of community partners, kind of, you know, all pulling data and then organizing together to what health looks like. And so when we look at public health, I'm a public health nurse. So my patient is the community and the community as a whole. And so when I'm looking at the health of the community, we're looking at not only physical health, but also emotional well-being. There's so many things that bear on our health that aren't necessarily what people think of as health related, but they've identified certain things that we can help with. So like healthy eating and active living, mental health and substance abuse, reducing health disparities and improving access to care is a huge one. And then fostering a healthy and connected community for all ages. So we bring together organizations, and I'll say just not just us, but they look at data from organizations and, you know, recommendations from organizations working across all of our counties to try to figure out kind of what our population wants and needs and identifies as most important to their health. And then that's what we work towards.
Excellent.
Thank you. And we want to know, another question that we have is, some of our listeners might be aware of the health district as used to be called Thomas Jefferson Health District. And as of January 1st, now we're the Blue Ridge Health District. So can you tell us a little bit about changing the name?
Yeah, so a lot of thought went into this, and it's been in progress for a while. And so basically, we want to make sure that our public health services in the area are inclusive and welcoming to everyone. And so the majority of health districts in Virginia are named after regional geography instead of individuals. And so I think our health director put it best with changing our name is symbolic of the deeper work we're doing as an organization to create an inclusive, equitable environment for our staff and clients, and to acknowledge and address the impact of racism on health, because that's a huge, I just want to say it bears a huge impact on health, and it's something that we need to work hard against and towards a more equitable future for our health district. And so the process, once we identified that, yes, this is something that we wanted to do, they sort of surveyed our district, our staff across the district for ideas, and then took kind of the top five and then opened it up to our community members and partners to vote. And Blue Ridge Health District won. I have to say that's what I voted for too. So it won, and I think it's a great change.
That's great. I think it probably won for a reason. It's definitely I think something people think of when they're in the area. Is there anything else that you would like the community to know about the Blue Ridge Health District? Or is there somewhere we should go to learn more about the district?
There's about 1,000 things I didn't say about the district and never remember, because we do so much. So we do have a website specific to our district where really the most up-to-date information about everything we do, and especially COVID right now. So our website is just, it's really easy. It's blueridgehd.org. And that's kept as up-to-date as humanly possible. I also follow us on Facebook and Twitter, because we push out, as soon as we have information, we push it out that way. So that's probably the easiest way for people to get more information about what services we're offering and our clinics changed and, you know, any of that. And then I think right now, sometimes it's hard to see everything we're doing. And so just knowing that, we really are doing everything as fast as we can and in the safest way we can. And people don't go into public health unless they're really passionate about it. It's, it's not something you do for the money or prestige. So really everybody is doing their hardest to work for things right now. And right now we just ask that the community does everything that we're doing with wearing a mask, social distancing, and getting a vaccine when it's available. I've gotten my first one. I'm excited to get my second one in a little bit. Yeah, just bearing with us and having patience. And yeah, I promise we're doing everything we can.
Well, thank you so much. I mean, just from hearing you talk, and personally, I've been impressed by how things are going. And so yeah, thank you from all of us for all the work that you guys are doing. It's really, really important all the time, and now with COVID, but all the time. You guys are doing great work, and public health is so important for our community and all communities. So thank you for people like you for joining that field. And thanks for talking with us today. So hopefully people can learn more about the health district and find out that there are tons of services that they can use. Before we let you go, we do also want to ask you, if you have any answer to this, what you are reading right now.
Oh, I always have an answer to this because I am a ridiculously voracious reader. So I think I have like three recent books that I adored. So one was The Book of Two Ways by Jodi Picoult. It's her newest one, and it was excellent. And then I just fell in love with Frederick Bachman, which I know I'm behind the times, but A Man Called Ove, and I think I'm mispronouncing that, and My Grandmother Says to Tell You She's Sorry are both excellent, and I love them. And I'm sure I'm going to end up reading all three of those again within the next year or two.
Those are definitely excellent choices. I think Friedrich Bachman is very beloved, and I think there's a, I think you can see why as soon as you get through one of those books. So I don't think you are alone in loving those books. Thank you so much. Those are great answers to all of the questions, not just the book question. We're really excited to share this with all of our listeners.
Great. Well, thanks for inviting me. I am a huge library fan. And yeah, if anybody has any questions, I just recommend just calling the health department. I can't tell you the variety of questions I answer on a daily basis. So someone will always be happy to answer the call.
Perfect.
Thanks.
A big thank you to Claire Rudet for joining us to record our episode. I learned a lot about our local health district, which is very much appreciated as we're still in the midst of the pandemic.
At the time of this recording, JMRL is offering contactless curbside pickup for materials at all branches Monday through Saturday, as well as Sunday at the Central Library. Limited in-person services are also available at branches. So we will link to further information about hours and procedures for each branch in our show notes. Please note that it might take longer than normal for your items to be ready to pick up, so we appreciate your patience while we continue to prioritize the safety and well-being of patrons and staff.
As always, this podcast is made possible through generous support from the Friends of the Library. If you'd like to learn more or join the Friends, please head to their website at jmrlfriends.org. Also, please hit subscribe wherever it is that you're listening to this podcast. If you have books that you'd like us to read and discuss, or topics that you'd like to hear on a future episode, please email us at podcast@jmrl.org.
That's all for us today. We'll be back in 2 weeks with more content. Thanks for tuning in, and we're glad to be
on the same page.